Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe in with you this week. Always happy to be here. I've been with you quite a few weeks this year, hadn't I? In fact, I was with you twice this week for the Al and Nathan Show. So this is a nice segue into where you can find out more about them and the show. MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, terrific website. Terrific people, in fact, at the Main Street Radio Network. They are the ones responsible for bringing this show to you. Well, one of the team responsible. They are in charge of the production of the program, that is. And boy, do they do a great job in keeping us backed, keeping us on the air. It's just great with them. And, you know, sometimes their sponsors disagree with the content of the program. Sometimes they themselves disagree with the content of the program. But they have our backs. We appreciate that. And we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network, too. They are the second part of the very crucial force behind bringing this program to you, because they distribute this show. Yeah, all right. So the Silk or Joe Show, we've been around in some form or another since 2013, November-ish. Most recently, this form has been a little over 2 years old now. So just great. We're going into our third year. I forgot to mute my phone, so you'll pardon me real quick. And also, you can find us on social media. The social media presence has been around for quite some time on Main Street Radio Network, their Facebook page. And you can find links to, actually, on MainStreetRadioNetwork.com to our various social media sites, such as the Al and Nathan Show on Twitter at Al and Nathan, or AlandNathan.com for that website. And you can also find Main Street Radio Network on Twitter at Main Street Radio. You can find Silk or Joe Show on Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. All right. Don't have anyone waiting in queue with you, so that's why I was able to fumble my way through that whole intro while muting my phone. But we do have a problem, don't we, with the system of justice in this country. We saw what happened to President Trump earlier this week. Suddenly there's 34 felony charges based around the same crime, and it's the same felony charge that they copied 34 times. I don't know why they stopped at 34, kind of a weird number. Why not 50 or 100 or 1,000? Overcharge, that's what the prosecutors usually do anyway to people. They go in with much more charging you than they think they can actually get away with in order to hopefully negotiate to what they actually want to charge you with. And it's sort of like the way the prosecutors work. It's sort of like haggling or something like that, you know, where you come in with in your head the price that you want to pay for an item, so you start out way, way lower, and the seller, they have a price that they want to sell the item for, so they start way, way higher, and then you haggle over it until you both get closer to what you want. And it's just sort of a psychological thing. You think you're getting a bargain by getting them to lower their price and getting it closer to the price that you want to pay, when really you're just getting it closer to the price that they expect to get. And the prosecutors work the same way. They will start out with every charge they can think of, the harshest ones they could come up with, because they expect you to be intimidated by that. And eventually you get to negotiate it down to what they actually want to charge you with, which is usually much, much less than they open up with. So, like I said, this is clearly a political prosecution, and they had 34 felony charges, so why stop at 34? I guess it's because he only wanted one, but it's the same charge, like I said, copied and pasted over and over and over again 34 times. And all of them stem from this one crime that no one knows yet. Now, how that is possible, well, actually, it's not exactly impossible, because you have to charge him with that one crime as well as the other stuff, otherwise the other stuff gets thrown out in court. So I guess they didn't unseal that particular part of the indictment, the part that actually tells you how they justify charging him for copy and paste 34 times the same crime. And that could be anything in there, honestly, because I mentioned on the Al and Nathan Show earlier this week, before the indictment had been unsealed, that each of us commits 3 felonies a day as of 2015. No one knows what those felonies are. You just do them in the course of your daily activities, because we have so many darn laws on the books already, and now a left-wing Democrat-ran city like New York City, they have a lot more laws than the average place has. So even in 2015, you probably had at least five felonies that you were committing in the course of your daily activities. So certainly between 2015 and 2023, more felonies had been added that the average person is committing on a day-to-day basis just by virtue of drawing breath within the city limits of New York City. And it could be one of those that's at the center of all this, one of those random crimes that nobody knows and nobody is really prosecuted for, except in cases like this where you want to make an example out of somebody. And this is an example that they want to make. They want to show you, if you support Trump, we can do this to your to the guy you follow. What do you think we're going to do to you? Trump has millions upon millions of dollars to defend himself with. What do you have to protect yourself with? If the district attorney of New York City decided to come after you with 34 felonies, can you defend yourself? You're out of luck. He has the entire resources of the city. In fact, he has the blessing of the voters. He was elected because he promised to do this kind of political prosecution. He promised to turn New York City into a banana republic. That's why he was elected by Democrats, because he said he would do this. So you think he's going to stop at Trump? Why? His voters want him to do this kind of thing. They want political prosecutions. Democrat voters want political prosecutions. They don't care about actual crime. This same district attorney who ran on prosecuting Trump, he has lowered 52% of felonies to misdemeanors. And of the misdemeanors that are brought before him, he only gets a conviction on 29% of them. So either he's incompetent or he doesn't think crime should be prosecuted, unless it's a Republican doing it. And the voters agree with this. You don't bother with actual crime, you bother with whatever you can invent on your political opponent. Democrats just seem okay with that. The voters do in New York City that voted for this man. It's very telling about the political party itself, how far they've gone into loony land, that they think that actual felonies committed against average citizens, we're talking stuff like armed robbery, for example, that's somehow not as bad as just being a Republican. Like, this actual district attorney, I brought up armed robbery because the district attorney in this case, he actually said armed robbery should be a misdemeanor. He didn't want it to be a felony. Now, keep this in mind. Armed robbery. Someone comes into your shop, puts a gun in your face, and says, give me all of your money or I will blow your brains out. Okay, that is armed robbery. A gun in your face with the threat that your life will end in moments. In fact, it could end if the guy sneezes and his finger pulls back reflexively. You're dead. This guy thinks that is a misdemeanor. Coming within seconds of death is just a misdemeanor. That's what the New York District Attorney thinks that is prosecuting Trump, and Democrat voters agree with this. They think that putting you within seconds of death is acceptable. But being a Republican, no, that's wrong. That's the real crime. That's the kind of lunacy that we are dealing with on the left these days. And it's really hard to make an argument that it's only some of them when you have them voting in people like Alvin Bragg, the district attorney in New York, who is responsible for this all of this. And the voters agree with him. They think he's doing a great job. How can you continue to say that, oh, most Democrats are okay, it's just a couple of delusional ones? How can you continue to say that when stuff like this happens? They vote in an absolute nutcase who thinks bringing you within seconds of death is acceptable behavior, but being a Republican is not. And he puts the full weight of the prosecution's office against the Republican and just lets the guy who almost kills you, yeah, he gets off scot-free or a slap on the wrist, something like that. That's no problem. How can you say that when Democrats vote in people like that, how can you say that the party is just ran by a couple of lunatics when it really seems like the entirety of the party has gone off the deep end when they allow stuff like that? Or maybe it's just a phenomenon dedicated to New York City, and perhaps Democrats elsewhere in the country are sane, and maybe this is just one reason to stay the heck away from New York City, as if you needed another reason. Given the condition of the city, it's no longer quite the tourist-friendly attraction, what with all the homeless, drugged-up people laying around on the streets, the severe spike in crime. Gee whiz, if you're not a native of New York City, how do you know where you're not supposed to go at night or during the day, even? There are just criminals and stuff laying around all over the streets. No one's prosecuting them. Who cares? Mental health issues run rampant. No one's doing anything about it. Who cares? As long as they get Trump. And the city is suffering because of that. People are fleeing the city. It's not a sparkling, gleaming apple anymore. It's more like some rotting little, I don't think I'm allowed to say what I was about to say on the air. Excrement on the face of America. That's what's left of the city after Democrats got through with it. Now, it is salvageable because the city has been this way before. It took a Republican to get them out of it. But we'll see how that goes. If they will get their act together, I doubt it. Not with insanity like this. Not when the voters are so far gone that they think almost killing somebody deliberately is less of a crime than being a Republican. Folks, we got more Silker Joe Show coming up after this break, so stick around.
This message is provided by Boehringer Ingelheim. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is one of the more common forms of progressive fibrosing interstitial lung diseases, with symptoms including breathlessness during activity, a dry and persistent cough, chest discomfort, fatigue, and weakness. There are more than 200 lung disorders that can lead to pulmonary fibrosis, an irreversible scarring of lungs that can negatively impact lung function, quality of life, and may become life-threatening. While approved treatments for people living with these diseases can help slow disease progression, new therapies are needed to help potentially stop progression. Fortunately, there is new research underway to assess the safety and efficacy of an investigational treatment in patients with IPF and other progressive ILDs. This is part of Boehringer Ingelheim's Phase 3 Global Fibrinear Program. To learn more about Fibrinear and eligibility requirements, visit fibrinear-ipf.longboat.com and fibrinear-ild.longboat.com.
New research released to mark the International Day of Math reveals that math is the subject most American adults say they're afraid of, but is also the subject they most want their children to be good at. So to help them support their children in building confidence with numbers, a new, fun, and engaging computer game called Teach Your Monster Number Skills has hit the market. Junaid Mabeen is a math expert from Number Skills, and he says building your child's confidence from an early age is vital.
Getting kids confident with numbers from a very young age is so important to their long-term success in mathematics. And the reason I use Teach Your Monster Number Skills with my own children is that it teaches them about numbers, about how creative and playful numbers can be. It's very fun and also educationally very powerful. You can download this great game today. Just search for Teach Your Monster Number Skills online. It's available on all desktop and mobile devices. Trust me, you won't regret it.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve! It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. So the Biden administration, they are trying to blame President Trump for the series of bank implosions that we had earlier this year. Why did I say earlier this year? It was just last month that it happened. It makes it sound like it happened 5 months or 6 months ago or something. Anyway, they issued the Biden administration, that is, issued a fact sheet trying to say this is all Trump's fault, even though they've had the helm for 2 years now. Joining us now to talk about this, we have John Burwell. He is senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and author of the book George Washington, Entrepreneur: How Our Founding Fathers' Private Business Pursuits Changed America and the World. John Burwell, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Good, good. So good to have you on, Joe. And George Washington, thanks for mentioning George Washington, Entrepreneur. He went through a lot of financial and monetary crisis on his own in the new nation. And I think, you know, it's a good guidebook. So I would recommend people getting George Washington, Entrepreneur, available at book venues.
All right. So speaking of financial issues, what's going on with these banks, though, that they're trying to blame Trump for somehow?
Well, yes, there's a lot of Trump is always a convenient figure, whipping boy that seems to live rent free in the Biden administration's heads. He, as you mentioned, they've been in charge for 2 years now, and they have been active in trying to get rid of, you know, Trump employees whenever they can. They had unprecedentedly, you know, wrested control from the Trump-appointed chairman Yellen and McWilliams at the FDIC, basically forced her out at the beginning of 2022 and said that, you know, the appointees, you know, would be controlling the agenda. So they basically, you know, you broke it, you buy it. They own this. And same with the other agencies. You know, they've had the majority of appointees, and as well as Obama, holdovers on the Fed. And the things they were talking about, the Trump deregulation, really modest regulatory relief, was pursuant to a law in Congress. It was passed in 2018, signed by President Trump, but approved by, voted for by 17 Democrats, including like John Tester in Montana, Tim Kaine of Virginia, and also several, you know, dozens of Democrats in the House, too. Coming, you know, because there was a consensus that I agree with, that Dodd-Frank, the red tape from that, was hurting, you know, the small and regional banks rather than the big guys. But the law didn't give, still gave regulators discretion when there was a risky practice like the one Silicon Valley Bank was pursuing, that they could, you know, go after and, you know, impose measures on it. And we know from the hearings last week, the congressional hearings, that the Fed knew about what they were doing and had communicated with the interest rate risk that Silicon Valley was taking, I mean, for 2 years, since 2021, and did nothing, apparently.
Well, yeah, so then that definitely does seem it falls within the purview of the Biden administration, because they were aware that this problem was going on, and not acting on it makes them at the very least as culpable as everyone who passed the law that allowed it to happen. And interesting, you mentioned Tim Kaine. I really don't think you can blame Trump, because Tim Kaine was the vice presidential pick of his opponent.
Yes. Very much so. I mean, you had a bunch of Democrats supporting this bill. So it's kind of hard. And the bill did some good things and it still allowed. Senator Crapo was pointing out, Senator Tester, Democrat who voted for this, still allowed the Fed to, although it didn't have all the banks in this size, didn't have all the mandates of the big banks, and a lot of the regional banks, I mean, were and are acting prudently. It still said, I mean, it still had language in it where the Federal Reserve could regulate for riskiness, complexity, financial activities, along with other risk-related factors.
Yeah, so really doesn't sound like it crippled it as much as the Biden administration is trying to make it. I guess this is just really a propaganda ploy. They're hoping no one looks into it.
Right. Well, also, they had other priorities that you know, Financial Stability Oversight Council, in its annual report looking at the risks to banking, mentioned climate change as a risk, but didn't mention interest rate risk, even though we had inflation and the Fed was jacking up interest rates. So it was clear. I mean, this is what happened. You know, one of the causes of the last, you know, a savings and loan crisis in the 90s, yet they just, the regulators apparently just ignored history there and let things, you know, Silicon Valley was making, you know, sort of politically or environmentally correct loans to green tech companies and everything. So we know that was, you know, it was an open justification for bailing out all the depositors. You had people like, you know, Congressman Ro Khanna said, you know, they're, look, we need to do this or else green tech will be out of underwater, basically. So maybe it was a justification for looking the other way. We'll see. There needs to be some investigations there.
Yeah, because we don't want this happening again. And just at the same time that you're seeing how this sort of politically motivated banking system is going, the Biden administration is talking about fighting anti-ESG legislation, which also had bipartisan support. You know, Joe Biden refers to it as coming from House MAGA Republicans, even though it passed the Senate controlled by Democrats in order to get to his desk. And yeah, you see the same problems there. You're putting politics over what the best thing to do with your money is.
Exactly. So it's hard to, I mean, what are they sort of want to use the banks as utilities to, you know, either, you know, with climate, you know, as far as, and there's a strong concern about like a choke point 2.0 as far as, you know, already directing banks away from unfavored industries like oil and gas that there, and there was there were reports that in Signature Bank, they made sure the new owner couldn't handle deposits for crypto. And our position has always been, you know, in a democracy, if something is legal, whether it's, you know, crypto, marijuana, oil and gas or whatever, you shouldn't use, you know, go behind the scenes. Politicians and bureaucrats shouldn't go behind the scenes and try to use the banking system as a weapon against the legal industry.
Just reminding me of what was going on in the Obama years where they were trying to stop, gun stores or at least ammo sellers from being able to use banks. They just secretly went to these banks and said, hey, these people no longer bank with you. And some of the banks bought into it.
Well, yes, that was called Operation Choke Point, and the Trump administration, okay, the DOJ stopped it. But now there's a question of there already may be a choke point 2.0 for cryptocurrency, and you know, could it be for other products? And if you just, you know, if you do that, that means more, you know, crypto is just going to go, you know, offshore to do its banking, you know, where there's more of a danger of things like money laundering and bad guys. So, I mean, there are bad effects when you try to, you know, use the banking system as a weapon against legal industries like that.
Yeah, and also serves to, by putting the money offshore, it means less money circulating in the U.S. in some way, shape, or form, too. So that can't be good, especially right now when we're teetering on this inflation crisis.
Yes. It's certainly not, yes. And so inflation is the one, you know, driver that needs to come under the control. I mean, there was certainly their mismanagement at Silicon Valley Bank, but this is what, you know, the inflation and the interest rates as a result of this is what, you know, creating stress in the banking system. So we need to put that under control, the spending under control, as well as, you know, not overregulate the prudent banks, because if you do things like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the price controls for late fees for credit card, that takes a chunk of their revenue away and also ends up, you know, raising costs to consumers, that's just gonna, you know, cause more, you know, danger to the banking system.
I'll have to keep an eye on this. Hopefully they will make the right choices over the next 2 years. But John Burlow, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show. And listeners, coming up to a break, so if you want to read his book, George Washington, Entrepreneur, How Our Founding Fathers' Private Business Pursuits Changed America and the World, you can check that out where books are sold. More show after the break.
The pandemic is just one factor that forced companies to rethink the way they conduct business. In addition to remote employees, companies are uploading more data to the cloud, and workers are using a wide variety of apps and devices. As a result, businesses are more susceptible to security breaches than ever before. For 10 years, the Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud has helped businesses improve security and minimize vulnerability. Security continues to be a top concern for businesses. According to JumpCloud Vice President Eric Brown, organizations need to reconsider their approach.
Identity is the new center of IT and the foundation around which all IT infrastructure should be built. That's where we at JumpCloud come in. We help companies and people make work happen with secure, frictionless access to the apps and data they need with an open directory platform designed for identity transformation.
To learn how Jump Cloud can help your business, visit jumpcloud.com.
Vitamin B12 is important for supporting not only our metabolism, but also our energy levels. Our brain and our nerves need certain vitamins like B12 in order to function properly. Even if you're eating all the healthy foods like fruits and vegetables and getting, you know, great sources of protein, it's sometimes the case that you can become deficient in one or more nutrient, and that's where supplements can be helpful. So if you want to support your B12 levels, Jarrow's methyl B12 is a great supplement to consider to optimize your B12 levels. This type of B12 is recognized by the body, so it's delivered to your cells more efficiently. It's also been shown that it is a great way to make sure that you're getting a highly absorbed form of vitamin B12 and one that's going to be retained better than other types of B12. You can learn more at jarrow.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you today. Kind of a sad week in the name of equality under the law, equal enforcement of the laws against us. But boy, they've been enforcing the laws at least, you know, give Democrats credit for that. too bad they're doing political enforcement. It's only if it's convenient for them they'll enforce it. For example, you have President Trump. All this junk over hush money payments in the 2016 campaign to Stormy Daniels, the porn actress, right? So How many other times have Democrats made such payments? An unknowable amount of times, actually. Congress has its own slush fund for making these sorts of payments. So you can imagine that certain incumbents during various elections would have tapped into that fund to cover up various affairs. We'll never know, because there's no accountability for this sort of thing. And except unless you're a Republican, that is, in which case the Democrats will come after you with the full weight of the law that they can come up with. Now, gee whiz, Bill Clinton, you know, you think President Trump spending $180,000 or whatever on Stormy Daniels was a bit. Bill Clinton spent $850,000 in 1990s dollars, mind you, so probably over probably like $1 million in today's money, trying to keep Paula Jones quiet. Yet that apparently is legal if Bill Clinton does it, but it's not legal if Trump does like a tenth of what Bill Clinton did. So that's what we're being told by the Democrats. It's okay when they do it. It's wrong when their opponents do it. Gee whiz, how often have we heard that line from them, right? In fact, another situation with that also stems from the 2016 election with Douglas Mackey. I talked about this on the Al Nathan show, but it's such a jarring thing that I figure I should cover it here too for those who might have missed it earlier this week. So Douglas Mackey, what he did was this. During the 2016 campaign, he and some friends decided, hey, let's create some, fake messages and stuff and send them out to Democrats and confuse the heck out of them, make them hate each other, stuff like that. You know, what the liberal media does, what MSNBC and CNN do to Republicans on a daily basis. So Douglas Mackey does that. Now, he made one that arguably did step into illegal territory when he told Hillary Clinton voters that they could vote via text message. The thing is, though, while that is one of the ones he was charged with, it makes it very clear that the judge, prosecutors, all that, they thought the real crime was that he dared to make statements against the Democrat Party during the election, dared try to get Democrats to stop voting or to vote for someone else. That's what they thought the real crime was, that he was trying to stop the weight of the Democrat Party from being bought down against Trump in the 2016 race. And so they prosecuted him on that. He's facing 10 years in prison because of this sort of stuff, because he dared oppose the Democrat Party and apparently had some minor effectiveness on like 4,000 people or something. I don't know. Meanwhile, a Democrat at the same time did the exact same thing. Christina Wong. She also told Trump supporters that they could vote via text. She said some other stuff too, in order to stop Trump supporters from voting. Apparently that's okay. Apparently that's acceptable behavior, perfectly legal to do. So she does exactly what Douglas Mackey did, but nothing happens to her. Everything's okay. Because she was, somehow morally in the right by trying to stop Republicans. Therefore, she's above the law. At least according to Democrats. Because not one of them cares that this exact same crime went unprosecuted when one of them did it. Everyone involved in the persecution of Douglas Mackey, they don't give two flips that this Christina Wong got away with doing it to Republicans. They're probably happy she did it. Meanwhile, it's a crime. That's also one of the precedents from this case, by the way. It's apparently now a crime to oppose the Democrat Party. At least that's how this ruling could be interpreted based on what they were talking about the actual crime being. Not that this guy told people to vote via text message, rather that this guy was in the first place even trying to disrupt Democrats from voting Democrat, trying to change people's minds, whether it was honest or not. How can you make an argument about whether things are honest or not when it comes to elections because of all the lies that are told out there? For example, that entire Trump-Russia dossier that we had, that was entirely a lie perpetrated by the Hillary Clinton campaign. Yet these people aren't going after her for spreading that misinformation. Not at all. They're happy with it. They support it. So again, how do you get away with this argument that it's wrong because it's misinformation, therefore it should be illegal to spread misinformation about Democrats, but then you're the ones who are spreading misinformation about Republicans? That seems to be quite a flippant double standard there that they just rubbed in our face by putting this guy into prison for 10 years. Goes back to what I said in the opening segment. What would you do if the Department of Justice decided that they were coming after you because you voted the wrong way, you supported the wrong candidate, you said the wrong thing on social media, and they didn't like it at all because even though it's legal, supposed to be legal protected speech, they decided, no, you're some threat to democracy or whatever. Therefore, we're going to lock you up for 10 years. What are you going to do about it? And that's what we're seeing with President Trump. He's the head of the movement. He's the head guy of the opposition to state authoritarianism. So what are you going to do to oppose them when they're taking your lead guy, slapping 34 random felony charges on him? Well, not actually, it's just one random felony charge copied 34 times and throwing the weight of the law against him. What will you do about it? They have the Department of Justice investigating him. They had, during the Trump administration, they had the FBI looking into him. They had the entire media establishment looking into him. All sorts of stuff was being directed against him. And they didn't find anything. They say they did, but if they really did, why didn't they have Attorney General Merrick Garland do anything about it? You know, we've had, I don't remember if it was on this show or the Al Nathan show, we had a Democratic strategist who said Robert Mueller found stuff and that he could have prosecuted Trump if it only weren't for Bill Barr. Well, Bill Barr's not there anymore. Statute of limitations hadn't ran out on anything. So why isn't Merrick Garland doing the prosecution if there was actually something there? And I guess it really just takes some, maybe that's why they farmed it out to this district attorney, because they knew there was nothing there to prosecute Trump on, but they really needed this headline. And maybe they have some other things in mind too for Trump. Maybe they want to keep this trial going into the 2024 campaign, and this was the best thing they could do. In fact, maybe they plan to put a gag order out there, which would in effect stop Trump from campaigning. Maybe that's the intent. We don't know. We'll find out soon enough. It's also entirely possible, based on some of the reaction from the Democrats to what this district attorney did, that he is just entirely insane and decided to go after Trump on his own. And the party doesn't exactly support it because they know there's nothing there and it's going to make them look like idiots. And they're scared of course, losing face like that and looking even more nutso than they do. And it's also maybe embarrassing to the people of New York City who voted for this guy, because this guy said he would go after Trump using any means necessary, and they voted him in for doing that, as I mentioned earlier in the show. But maybe they didn't expect that he would just make stuff up off the top of his head. We still don't know what that one hidden crime is that these 34 copied and pasted charges are related to. And I say copy and pasted charges because, like I said repeatedly, it's the same charge that's copied 34 times for whatever reason. Not sure why they settled on the number 34. You know, why not 47, 15, or 38? No idea. So, well, I guess never know, maybe, because it's so embarrassing that it might all be sealed up and pushed under the rug by this time next year. Who knows? It might just be intended to stop, to put a wrench in the machinery of Trump and maybe just be a speed bump for him rather than something to permanently stop him from campaigning. Maybe just something they hope to, knock off some of his early support or hurt him in the primaries coming up, maybe. It didn't work, though. It did backfire exceptionally well. In fact, this seemed to have been a better fundraising event and support builder for President Trump than any of his rallies ever were. So it did backfire quite significantly. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't really care what that alleged crime is that these 34 charges center around. I know the motivation from this prosecutor was political, so I still would support Trump even if he was indicted, convicted of something. Now, granted, I don't know if you have a felony, if you can run for president or not, but that's not going to happen. There's no way that this is going to... Well, let me rephrase that. This is New York City. You will find some of the most rabid leftists in the country in New York City. It will not be a jury of Trump's peers judging him. It will be a severely biased judge. In fact, we already know the judge in the case is severely biased. I believe it's his daughter works for Kamala Harris right now. So we know that the judge is stacked against Trump. We know that the jury is just going to be 12 people who hate Trump. You're not going to find 12 people who like Trump in New York City. Come on now. Don't be ridiculous. So we know that at least at that level, he's going to get convicted. It will be overturned when it gets to the appeal courts or Supreme Court or however high up it has to go. It will be overturned because this is total garbage. But we know that liberals loved having total garbage convictions and show trials. So we saw that with Roger Stone. So based on the bias of the judge and how biased the jury will be, we know that at least at the first stage, it will be a conviction. And meanwhile, the campaigns will be going on. And boy, will they be using this as propaganda against Trump. And like I said, they're doing this to him. You think they won't hesitate to do this to you next? If this succeeds. Folks, more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Spring is here, and there's no better time to try something new. Take a taste of Coke Zero Sugar and enjoy real Coke taste and Zero Sugar. Now available at participating Burger King restaurants. Try Coke Zero Sugar with your favorite food from Burger King. Satisfy your hunger and enjoy Coke Zero Sugar with a piping hot breakfast sandwich, like a sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwich. Sizzling sausage, fluffy eggs, and melted American cheese on a toasted croissant makes for a delicious breakfast to start your morning right. And don't forget the crispy hash browns. Or if the flame-grilled Whopper sandwich, BK Royal crispy chicken sandwich, or chicken fries are your fave, you are in luck. All Burger King menu items pair perfectly with an ice-cold Coke Zero Sugar. It's the perfect no-sugar sparkling beverage that goes great with everything. Take a taste of Coke Zero Sugar to enjoy spring your way at Burger King, where you rule. At participating U.S. Burger King restaurants. Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
This is sponsored by IBM. Job seekers, students, and career changers want to pursue roles in science, technology, engineering, and math, but aren't familiar with career options. At the same time, online training and digital credentials are emerging as a recognized pathway to opportunity. Misconceptions about the cost of training and what's required are often roadblocks to success. To tackle this and bring STEM education closer to underrepresented communities, IBM Skills Build is announcing 45 new educational partners. IBM Skills Build is a free education program focused on underrepresented communities in tech, helping all develop valuable new skills and access to career opportunities. Justina Nixon St. Till, IBM Chief Impact Officer.
Technology training can have a transformational effect on a person's life. IBM is committed to raising awareness of the many roles that exist across industries in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. IBM Skills Build continues to grow with new partners around the world, working together to skill 30 million people by 2030.
For more, skillsbuild.org.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Right. Thank you, listeners, for staying with this hour of the Silker Joe Show. Almost finished with the program, we are joined right now by Dr. Rainer Zittelmann. He is a much sought-after guest speaker in Asia, the United States, Latin America, Europe, and over the last few years, he has written articles and given interviews to many of the world's leading media, including The Daily Telegraph, Forbes, Le Monde, and Der Spiegel. He is author of In Defense of Capitalism. Dr. Zittelmann, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show today. How are you?
Yes, I'm great. I'm here in New York City today.
Oh, cool. Oh, it is interesting you'd be in New York City because in the United States, that's one of the hotbeds of opposition to capitalism. So I take it you have a very strong defense that you're spreading there.
Yes, but to be honest, it's everywhere in the world. And, you know, my book is published in 30 languages and I travel to all the 30 countries, and this is a worldwide phenomenon, not only in the United States. Capitalism is under attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been polls done here that show, especially among people, you know, younger than 30, capitalism really is out of favor. I think back in 2018, a majority of people under 30 were against capitalism. It seems they think it's a failed system for some reason.
Yes, this was, I commissioned a poll in 34 countries, and one of these countries was, of course, the United States. And we saw there, this is the good news, that the majority of Americans is still pro-capitalism. But this is especially true for the older ones. My age, I'm older than 60, I'm 65 now. But for younger ones, younger than 30, there's, of course, I think it's not comes not as a surprise for you, there's a lot of anti-capitalism, but all in all, maybe let me give me one statement. I saw some weeks ago the new Index of Economic Freedom from the Heritage Foundation. It's ranking how economically free are the countries in the world. And what was a very bad news for United States had the worst ranking ever since they created the index in 1995. And today, even 16 European countries, according to this index, are more economically free than the United States. And, you know, we are not economically free in Europe. So this is the one thing. But my poll gives us a more optimistic view for the population in the United States. There is still a majority pro-capitalism, even if mainstream media and university and others, if they are opposed to capitalism. Ordinary people, majority of them, is pro-capitalism in the United States. From all these 34 countries where we did this poll, only in Poland were more people pro-capitalist than in the United States, only Poland.
Mm. Yeah, I think that part of this, especially among the young people, might be attributed to the fact that what they think we have right now is capitalism in its true form, when really what we have going on right now is sort of really high state control over what we have over our economic system. There are so many rules and regulations that small businesses will easily be crushed if they don't have a lawyer on hand. So, whereas big businesses can afford to have lawyers and all that. So, and the government just involving itself at every level, it really seems like these policies are, in fact, what the socialist left would want to have in place, but they're the ones that are turning them against capitalism, even though that's not technically what we have going for us. Is that a fair summary?
I agree, absolutely. You know, this was also with the financial crisis 2008. First, they destroy capitalism, the central banks, the government. And then if there are problems, they blame capitalism. This is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And sort of flipping, blaming capitalism for the things that they do wrong. And it's ironic, too, that with the U.S. having the being lower on economic freedom, that the socialists left here, they would point to Europe and say, well, these guys are the socialist examples that we should follow, when really it seems that the U.S. has already followed socialism to its natural point where we have less economic freedom than Europe now.
Yes, I'll give you one example. I remember Bernie Sanders, he mentioned very often Scandinavian socialism, spoke about Sweden, Denmark. But if you look again in this index of economic freedom, Sweden is number 10, United States only number 25. So Sweden is much more economically free today than the United States. It has nothing to do with socialism. There were socialists in Sweden 50 years ago, but it was a total disaster. And of course, still today, they have high income taxes, but you have also high income taxes in New York, for example, where I'm right now. But for example, they abolished wealth tax, they abolished inheritance tax. And now I will tell you something that may maybe come to a surprise for you. The number of billionaires today in Sweden is 60% higher than in the United States, adjusted to population, of course. You know, there are only 10 million people in Sweden. And right. I read the book from the new book from Bernie Sanders last week. The title is "It's Okay to Be Angry with About Capitalism" from Bernie Sanders. And in one chapter, he says we should abolish all billionaires in the United States. There should be zero billionaires in the United States. But do you know what it means? The only countries where you have zero billionaires is Cuba, is North Korea, and some very poor African countries. So if he tells us we should abolish all billionaires in the United States, it means there shouldn't be successful entrepreneurs in the United States, and we should have an economy similar to North Korea or to Cuba. This is what it means. He knows nothing about Sweden and about Europe.
Well, he knows they're good talking points to people who don't do their research, and people who don't see through him, because Bernie Sanders himself is a millionaire. He's got several mansions to his name, and here he is saying that the rich should suffer or be abolished. Well, when you take out the billionaires, that puts him at the top of society.
Yes, maybe this is the reason why he don't want to abolish millionaires, but only billionaires.
Right.
Yes, this is crazy. But let's come back to my book, In Defense of Capitalism. I have a lot of interviews now, and yesterday someone asked me, do you think you can convince anti-capitalists? And I said, no, I don't think so. And he said, but why do you write a book if you don't believe you can convince them? I wrote the book for people who are pro-free market, pro-capitalism, to provide them with all the facts, with all the arguments. I can guarantee you there's no other book where you can find so many facts and arguments. You know, I have two PhDs in history and sociology. The book is with 900 footnotes. It's with 360 books and scientific papers in the bibliography. But at the same time, it's written in very easy way. Everyone who can read Wall Street Journal can understand the book. And so I wrote the book for people who are pro-capitalism.
All right, Dr. Zittelmann, where can we get a copy of this book?
You call that with Amazon or with Barnes & Noble. My name is Rainer Seidelmann, but if you read In Defense of Capitalism, then you can find the book and order it. I would appreciate it.
All right, listeners, you can go ahead and check that out because we are done with you for the day. And thank you again to Dr. Rainer Zittelmann for being on the program. His book, In Defense of Capitalism, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You heard the man. You can go check that out. And you can also, while you're at it, check us out. MainStreetRadioNetwork.com is our website. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.